This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, y'all, big news.
Yes, big news. We will be hosting our third live show in partnership with the Highline Parks Culture Shock event.
Join us on Saturday, April 22nd at 4 p.m. on the Highline in New York City's Chelsea neighborhood.
Our lineup is going to be jam-packed with Black Girl Magic. We are going to have author Naomi Jackson, New York Times Magazine staff writer and co-host of the podcast Still Processing, Jenna Wortham, and the founder of Well-Read Black Girl, Glory Edom.
Yes, don't miss it. Tickets are free.
Free.
You heard that right. Free with RSVP. To RSVP, just visit highline.org and click on the Culture Shock banner. Seriously, they are going to go fast. They are free 99.
Free 99.
Don't miss it.
Don't miss it. We hope to see your shining faces. So you guys are be there or be square or be out of town or under the weather.
Exactly.
That's it.
All right. See you soon.
All right. Bye.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are...
For Colored Nerds.
The conversations that Black people have.
When white people are not in the room.
But we record them.
And we put them on the internet.
How's it going?
Honestly, I'm doing pretty good. We're making some moves. I'm going to have a new show out. That's all I can actually say. But I'm excited about it. I think other people are going to be excited about it. That's literally all I can say.
I'm excited. I'm excited to be here today, too.
I am, too. The sun is shining today.
I woke up today and I actually did something I very rarely do. I actually listened to some gospel music.
Yeah.
Which I shouldn't say with like disdain.
But, no, gospel music is like, it's like the best musical genre.
Yeah. I mean, to wake up to, especially, I was in a very good space.
I know you were sending Tasha Cobbs links at like 7:30 this morning. Like, wake up and grab your blessing.
I need to like screenshot that and send it to my mom so she can realize I'm not like fully. Like
a complete
full
heathen.
Yeah. Yes, but
I'm awake, I'm up, I'm blessed. And I think that today's episode is going to be really exciting. Okay, so we have a third person in the room with us today. In the studio with us this morning, today, we have the fabulous, the fantastic, one of our favorite writers.
Yes.
Like somebody who you and I are both big fans of. Senior culture writer for BuzzFeed News. Bim Adewumi. Bim,
hi.
Welcome to this show.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Well, I'm really glad that you're here. Same. And I know Eric's glad too.
Yeah.
So let's get cracking. We're going to talk about you today.
Yes.
Listen, my favorite subject.
Number one.
I need that. I don't know if you know this. I'm actually a narcissist. So this is ideal for me. I get to just kind of lean into myself.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It's the easiest thing to lean into.
Exactly. Listen, if I don't lean in, who's going to lean in?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Thank you. This is exactly what Sheryl Sandberg meant when she wrote that book.
Yeah, she said lean in words. That was the part that it got cut off.
That's the bit no one ever remembers, but we remember.
Yeah. So, Bim, I found out recently you and I are kind of almost neighbors. Mm. We both live in Bed-Stuy.
Yes.
And I noted that you're not from there, just based upon your accent. Just that's not where you're from.
That's correct. Very astute.
We're a sharp bunch.
Yeah, I'm something of a sleuth. But like, you know, you write a lot about American pop culture, but like you're from Britain. How did you get from London to here at BuzzFeed, like as one of like, I think one of the leading Black voices on Black American pop culture on the internet?
Well, first of all, that's very kind of you to say. So I'm going to kind of do a very rambly response to this. I think a lot of people assume that popular culture is easy and obvious. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time people will respond to something you say with, duh. For example, on Twitter, which I suppose is the wrong venue for some stuff. But I will say something on Twitter and then somebody will explain it back to me. And I'm like, no, I know this. I wrote that because I know that. And I think there's a real case of, you know, first of all, that it's a frivolous subject and that also it is something that is obvious. Everyone knows it. You know, you're not special for knowing this thing or for saying this thing. Mm-hmm. And I look at it kind of like modern art when people kind of go to galleries and kind of go, I could do this. And the answer every time is, yeah, but you didn't.
Yeah.
So, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm. So in terms of how I know so much is because of... cultural imperialism by the United States of America. Mm. They've done an excellent job of sending out their products into the world and making it so that sometimes that's all you can see. So my favorite sitcom of all time, which makes me instantly basic, I have to kind of just say that up front, is Friends. Because for the longest time growing up in England, Friends was on television every Friday night at 9 p.m. Mm. And then after the show ended, it was on telly pretty much every single day. I'm talking multiple episodes, mm-hmm. every single day on Channel 4 or on E4 or on Comedy Central or wherever. So I could pretty much quote any episode of Friends, any episode of Friends. Like I know where to laugh. I know everyone's tone. I know entire chunks of dialogue. Mm. It's ridiculous mm-hmm. and unnecessary life skill. And yet I have it. So that's how. It's because America does such an excellent / terrifying job of selling its cultural products everywhere in the world. But in terms of how I got to BuzzFeed, I was working at the BuzzFeed office in the UK. Mm-hmm. So I'd actually transferred here last March. I arrived here on Super Tuesday. Specifically to write
fun
about
day. Fun, yeah.
The funnest day of all. I literally arrived and I was like, hang on, something's happening. Oh, it's Super Tuesday. So, I kind of got here. And the aim of me coming here was to kind of cover something fairly wide. So it was some pop culture, but also politics and, you know, American life. And sort of, I don't know if you're familiar with an English writer called Alastair Cook. He was a journalist with... The Guardian, and his letters were broadcast on the BBC as well. And he used to do something called Letter from America, and which, I mean, this was obviously pre-internet. So sometimes that was the only kind of like fresh dispatch you would get from America in England. Mm. So he would write a letter and it would be about whatever was in the news that week. You know, he wrote about everything because he was here for decades. I think in the end, he was a naturalized American citizen and he lived in, I think, upstate New York. Mm-hmm. So Alistair Cook was this kind of like authority. He spoke like this. He spoke at the BBC. You know, he was there. You know. And so he's like this kind of tall white man in a suit. And that's not who I am, obviously. I'm a short black woman. But I think I like to think of the work that I do to an extent to be sort of like Alistair Cook, which is to kind of take an American product and to explore it and to think of it both in the American context, but also in the British context, but also wider context. Because in addition to being British, I'm also Nigerian. I'm also a Muslim. And there are things that I think the great objective white men of days past just didn't think of. Surprise. When they were doing this. I mean, it's shocking. It was a surprise for me too, to kind of be like, oh, hold on. No one took into account this thing or whatever. So that's the very convoluted, not very clear line of thoughts as to how I'm here.
No, it's not. I mean, I didn't think that was convoluted at all. Mm-mm.
So wait, how did you get started writing though?
My childhood was in many ways idyllic. With hindsight, I can say that. At the time, I probably thought I was being, you know, treated horribly. But I'm sure I look back now and I'm like, that was actually not a bad childhood. Yeah. We moved to Nigeria when I was a child, and we left England and we went back to Nigeria. Well, my parents went back. We were going for the first time. And my dad is he's a very smart man. And he is kind of obsessed with education and with reading in particular. And so when I was a kid, we had like our regular pocket money and then we had book money. And they were entirely separate things. And there was, you know, you could spend money on books and that was a separate thing. And then you could spend your frivolous nonsense money on like silly things. So my dad would make us buy reading material and then tell him about what we'd read. So it was a very kind of easy way to engage kids in reading. Mm-hmm. So I've been like an obsessive reader since I was very, very young. And I've been enabled by my parents very much to do that. So I quote unquote wrote my first book when I was like 9, which was essentially a recycled story that I wrote in an exercise book and asked my dad if he could publish. And he very kindly said, no one can do that in this house. But I'm proud of you. Well done. Good job. So I've been writing a very long time, but I kind of formalized it when I went to university and studied journalism in the UK. So I went to Bournemouth University, which has a very, very, very good media school. And then I went to work for the BBC in radio. So I was going to be a radio person. But I left the Beeb. I kind of meandered for a very long time. I worked in a bookstore. I was very good at it. I was a children's bookseller. And then I ended up at The Guardian. I worked for some local papers, and then I worked for The Guardian, various parts of The Guardian. My last job at The Guardian was as women's editor, and then BuzzFeed came knocking, and then I left and went to work for BuzzFeed in London. So the short answer is I studied journalism and I ended up working as a writer. But the long, long, long answer is, who the hell even knows? I essentially meandered like pillar to post. Like, what am I doing? And like, I see 25-year-olds now and I think to myself, how the hell are you so focused and so knowledgeable about what you want to do with your life? Like, someone said to me, you know, Bim, how did you get? And I was like, fam, it's luck. Like, it feels like, I mean, not just luck, obviously, my mother's prayers, just kind of like, please, Lord, just direct her.
So one of the pieces like that I was really excited about that you've written is Why the Walking Dead Has Become Fan Fiction's Muse. Like when it came out, I was like, oh, shit. Just because like you rarely see one, you just rarely see anything about fan fiction that's not like using it as like the punchline.
Yes.
You know, but it was such a like, I just thought it was such a great exploration of like, you know, why this is something that's like not trivial, why this is like, why it's, you know, even important. But one of the things I was curious about is like how you came to fan fiction, like specifically. And in the piece, you know, you talked about Walking Dead and kind of the Rashone like relationship, the ship rather. Just say more about your relationship with fanfiction.
Okay, so fanfic is, first of all, just one of the lights of my life. I love fanfiction. Even poor fanfiction, I think it's telling a specific story. I think I started reading fanfic as a teenager. So in the early days of, do you remember the time when you used to get AOL via CD, CD-ROM?
You got like six of them a day.
They were in supermarkets, they were in magazines. Yes. Like, take this home and dial up some internet. And I remember back then, essentially, I don't know how I found fanfic. I think it's the kind of thing that fanfic finds you if you're into that. Especially at the time of, in terms of like the development of the internet at the time. There were only like, 17 websites at the time. And inevitably, you know, fans find their spaces. So I read fanfic as a teenager. And my ships then were varied. You may remember that even though telly was very, very black in terms of like American television in the 90s, people weren't really writing fanfic about those characters.
Yeah.
So I suppose my big fanfic like home was Dawson's Creek. I was massively into it. I have merchandise. I have posters. And again, it's one of those things that in moving across a continent to America last year, I packed up a good part of my life. So I began finding artifacts from my previous life. So I saw my Dawson's Creek poster and I was like, what the fuck? But it was like lovingly preserved, glossy still. I found like Dawson's Creek CDs, like soundtracks to the show. I was deeply into Dawson's Creek and I will love Pacey forever. So Dawson's Creek was like my big introduction into fanfic. I was also into Boy Meets World. Angela and Sean, one of my first black girls on screen. Yes. I loved Angela. And I love that she was like 10 years older than everyone in the cast.
Yeah.
But because of the way she looks.
The way melanin works.
I mean, have you seen? Exactly. Yeah. See, what had happened was Angela looked like she was literally a decade younger. And I was like, wait. And again, I saw her recently and I was like, why is your face the same? It's remarkable. Anyway, so that was, those are my first like fanfic that I recall. I remember kind of being very, very, very much into. In terms of like Rashone, another light of my life, I love Denai Gurira. I think she is stunning. And I think mm-hmm. she also has this incredible brain beneath it all. You know, she's an award-winning playwright. Mm-hmm. I mean, who the hell is an award-winning playwright who's also in the highest rated cable show of mm-hmm. all time? Like, just casual. Just yeah. casually. Yeah.
And that bone structure.
And the bone structure.
It's mean.
It's mean. It is offensive. It feels like it's an attack on me. Mm-hmm. If she wasn't black, I'd call it a hate crime. But I cannot deal with how stunning she is. I saw a photo of her recently at some event at her former school. Her head is completely shaved for the Black Panther movie that she'll be in next year. Mm-hmm. And I have never seen a skull so smooth. I wanted to kiss it for luck. I wanted to reach through the screen and just place my lips tenderly upon her cranium. And I thought, no, you can't do that. That's creepy. But she is a little bit creepy, but not too much. But I love her. So I was when she turned up in season 3 of The Walking Dead, I was like, okay, well, I'm back in the saddle. Because I started watching The Walking Dead, even though I'm deathly scared of everything scary. Mm-hmm. But I watched it because I love Andrew Lincoln, because Andrew Lincoln is a British actor who yeah. was mm-hmm. someone I have loved for pretty much most of my adult life. So I really, really love Andrew Lincoln. So I was like, fine, I'll watch this for you, Andrew. And then Danai came up in season 3 and I was like, okay, I'm definitely going to watch it for all of us now. And so I ended up starting to kind of watch it. And then, nothing was happening between Michonne and Rick. And that yeah. was fine mm-hmm. because I'm sure you guys know this too, as nerds yourselves rather. You go into a show where there's a black character and your expectations are lower than zero.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
Non-existent.
Yeah. Non-existent.
Yeah. They're like, oh, if they stay alive, they're yeah. going to be tap dancing by the first right. episode.
While eating chicken.
Exactly.
So the bar is so low, it's underground. And you're kind of like, fine, whatever happens, I will roll with it, because otherwise I'm not going to watch any telly because everything is problematic and everything is terrible.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely, Michonne began emerging as this person who was a person, even though I still have issues with the fact that we don't know her last name, which... That's yeah. another story, but that's fine. But Michonne, Danai really imbued the character with a lot of kind of nuance because she's a spectacular actor. There's also the thing that you could not ignore, which was the palpable chemistry between her and Rick Grimes, played by Andrew Lincoln. So to me, there seemed to be like an obvious ship opportunity.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone does a lingering look as well as Andrew Lincoln, like without even any words, he's just looking at you and you're kind of like, that was an entire poem. What the fuck? Like, he's very, very good at doing that. And Danai is very, very good also at returning those looks. And I remember, half conversations, sometimes online, sometimes in person, like, are they together? And people going, no, they're not. And you're like, are you sure they're not? It's like, they're not. It's like, all right, fine. And then eventually they got together in season 6. And when that happened, I stood up from the sofa where I was watching. And I'm not kidding. I did a praise dance around my living room. And I was like, finally, something good from fandom. So yeah, I really, really love them. So for me, fanfic is one of those things that, like you said, it's not trivial. Yeah. It's important. For me, the fanfic that exploded around the time... I mean, there was lots of fanfic about Rick and Michonne long before they actually got together. But after they did, there was this explosion where there's something very interesting about having your ship go canon. Mm. Like, having it recognized, as a real relationship that is not in your head, that you are not, you're not all day thinking about, I wonder what... It's like, no, it's here. It's real. We've written it in. Whatever anyone says, this happened. So... In fact, your focus then shifts from, oh, God, they're fucking this up by not putting them together with, oh, God, how are they going to fuck it up now they've put them together? Yeah. So, nerd problems. But the fic that was coming out post Rick and Michonne getting together in season 6 was astonishingly good. And it was, people were thinking about this, again, because it had so long to kind of marinate on this idea of them together. So there were all these scenarios and... So many of the writers, not all by any means, but so many of the writers in that fandom are black women.
Yeah.
And that to me is revolutionary, where you have an example of what you want to see and then you go away and you just kind of write and write and write. And I just, and the work is good. Like some of the people I highlighted in the piece, a writer called Ash Jordan, mm-hmm. Who goes by Cake by the Pound, she writes the most beautiful dialogue. Like it's incredibly natural, incredibly sweet, and very true to the character. That's the other thing. These are not out of character. Another writer called Kendra, I forget her surname, but she's Kendra Writer 33 on fanfic.net, and she is again amazing. She's a master at just world building, but she wrote one, and it's ongoing. It's called Vantage Point, mm-hmm. and it's like this noirish. Oh God! Like I when I first read it, I was like, "Who the hell is like this? Is so good!" I'm blown away every time by the amazing, amazing writing that comes out of something so simple, which is I love this show so much that I'm going to imagine worlds, other worlds in it.
It's like you pull out the best kernel of a show and just kind of like create something beautiful from that. I haven't always liked fan fiction. My wife kind of put me onto it.
As women always do.
Because yeah. I was like, I don't know if I could really get into this. And she was like, well, name a show. And I will send you some good fix about uh-huh. that show. And so I was like, I was trying to be like somewhat facetious. I was just like, oh, well, Suits. Because I was like, oh, this is like a ridiculous thing. You know, there's not going to be any like Suits. And she was like, are you sure?
There is so much good Suits fic. Oh my God. So much.
Yeah. And so she was like, I can see you some crazy stuff about Suits. And she ended up sending me some stuff about Gina Torres's character, uh-huh. Jessica Pearson.
Jessica.
Which was really good. And it just like, if you don't watch Suits, like Jessica Pearson's character is just like really like accomplished, just like she just doesn't fucking play. She's just always in control of her own like decisions, and like she has an amazing clarity of her path that I would never achieve. But but in this, like, it gave it so much more of like a whole like world to her character. And it was interesting, like in the last, like, so you know, spoiler alert for Suits, but like in the last season she kind of like leaves the show, and they had just started to really like flesh out her character. And I realized like a lot of that, like what they were finally starting to explore, was the things that people had been doing in fan fiction like all of this time,
right?
And it's interesting, I think the writers like finally, the producers finally like realized that, because now they're talking about like creating a spinoff yeah. like, with just her character, all of her character.
Whoa.
Yeah, she never really got like a good love interest. Mm-mm. Like she was always a B plot, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's the other thing as well that fanfic accomplishes, which is to flesh out what the producers and the writers leave out.
Yeah. Mm.
So I can't tell you, which I wrote in the piece also, how many fics I have read where they specifically give Michonne a surname, mm. and they have her reveal it to Rick. And, you know, there will be a scene where she will kind of give information, usually, you know, post-sex, because it's smutty. And I love smutty fanfic, by the way. Let me just put that out there. But it'll be one of those things where they're in a very kind of open mood, and, you know, he'll ask, you know, I haven't asked this before, but what is your surname or whatever? Yeah. And it's always something really small, but it's so pointed, because they're saying, fucking hell, give her a name. In a way, it's wishful for me. You know, it's a longing to see these characters become full characters, because as you say, so often you are the B plot.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, you see yourself on screen, but it's never in the capacity of, oh, I'm the lead. I'm the, you know, so it's almost like a corrective. Yeah. Like, this is where you're messing up, so mm-hmm. we're going to fix it. We're gonna flesh out the parts that you cannot even see are missing, you know?
Mm-hmm. So actually, I think that's a good spot to take a break.
Let's do it.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
All right, welcome back. We are talking to Bim Adewumi.
Thank you.
The thing that you say about B plots and Black women being B plots, that's something that I think is like prevalent, like not just here, also across the pond, mm-hmm. and all sorts of media. But something that I've noticed, just as an American person who watches British TV like through the internet or on Netflix or whatever, is like how many Black female like lead characters there are, and also how many like Black female love interests there are, even like even specifically like Black female love interests on predominantly white shows, mm-hmm. like if they have to have a girl who someone's going on a date with, whereas like I feel like in the United States it's just almost always default a white woman, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. I feel like there's a little bit more mixing it up in British TV. But like Lovesick, Crazy Head, Misfits, Chewing Gum, like all these things come to mind. Even like just I noticed that I feel like I see more like dark skinned Black women on British TV. Mm-hmm. And what I want to know is that like what is like you have a really good read on like US stuff and also of UK stuff. Like what is the truth? Like what is
the
truth?
Is that the Oprah gift?
That's
you just
the
said?
Oprah gift, yes. Like, what is the truth?
So what is the truth? I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think Americans, and we do the same in Britain, we tend to view American TV as a wider set. Mm-hmm. And I think Americans do the same thing with British television. You have to recall that everything that you see has been curated for you to see it. Mm. And I think because we're watching, so now that I watch almost exclusively American television since I live here now, mm-hmm. I suddenly think to myself, oh, it's as bad as the UK in many ways. Because this is the thing. So to go back to fanfic very quickly, I've made a decision for the most part to only read fanfic with Black female characters.
Yeah.
Because that to me is the world that needs the most furnishing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really interested in anybody else. I'm really here for Black girls first, mm-hmm. every time. And I think sometimes the television that Americans get that is British, especially Black Americans, is going to be TV that essentially has Black characters. It's almost self-fulfilling. Like, especially if you watch Chewing Gum, mm-hmm. Netflix is likely going to recommend Crazy Head.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to recommend Lovesick.
Yeah.
And so on. So I think, yes, it's been slightly better in terms of visibility in recent years. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's still very, very bad. The bulk of British television is still incredibly white. Still. But the stuff that makes its way over across the pond is the stuff that is a bit more diverse, in addition to like the regular shows like Downton Abbey and all the period dramas. Mm-hmm. But in reality, television in the UK is still, you know, behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, incredibly white still. But it has got slightly better and more visible. And I think there is also a difference. The fact that, you know, Crazy Head, you know, one of the leads in that is Susan Wacoma.
Oh, was amazing.
I am obsessed with her.
She's amazing. Crazy Head is fantastic. She is amazing.
Oh, she's so good.
She's so good. And you have Michaela Cole. Of mm-hmm. course, Susie is also in Chewing Gum as Cynthia, the amazing younger sister.
Oh, so good.
So good. But there's this young writer and performer called Lolly Adefope. She's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I think there's like more inroads are being made, and the successes of these kinds of shows, I think, kind of helps to kind of propagate that idea as well. You mentioned Lovesick. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the storyline of, but it's essentially this guy going back and finding all his previous sexual partners to tell them he has chlamydia, mm-hmm. so they should go get tested, mm-hmm. which is right. That's British love right there. I saw that and I was like, oh, my homeland. And one of the person he calls is played by Nikki Amuka Bird, mm-hmm. who is a dark-skinned Black woman. Mm-hmm. And I remember, again, starting when I was like, oh, are we just going to, oh.
Yeah. Just going to creep that in here.
Right. Literally, I think I made that sound like,
No, and they had those like kind of rope. Like it wasn't just like, because some of his like partners that he goes back to contact,
yeah,
like they end up not really having much interaction in the episode, or they have like a comically bad interaction,
right? Right.
But like they had like a whole romance within the span of an episode. It was so sweet.
It was very sweet, and I remember thinking to myself, wait. Is this allowed? Like, oh, like,
yeah.
And then another episode, his best friend Luke is on a date, you know, the same episode actually, with her best friend, who is also a woman of color. And I was like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Wait.
Yes.
And so that was shocking even for me. And I watch a lot of television and I'm British. So this is what I mean when I tell you that it's still rare. You know, relatively speaking, it is still rare. So I think that's the thing to kind of bear in mind, that a lot of what you're getting has been perfectly curated to kind of fit the kinds of things you already like. So if you like one thing, chances are you will find the other thing. And so it kind of gives you a slightly skewed idea of what television looks like. Because I do hear a lot of Americans say, oh, things seem better in Britain. And every time I'm like, no, it looks that way. I think it's getting better. And my hope and fervent prayer is that it will keep getting better. Mm-hmm. But I still think that there's so far to go. So far. And it's not a coincidence that so many Black British actors and, you know, and creative people in general are leaving the UK to come to Hollywood or elsewhere, because opportunities. I mean, the recent situation with Daniel Kaluuya and Samuel L. Jackson, Get Out.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, well, you know, I sympathize with every Black performer in the US, but also it's shit in the UK. So go, Danny, go. Go to Hollywood. Take all the roles.
I love him.
He has a great face. So he was also he was on Skins as well, you know, back in the day. And he was a writer in the Skins writer's room as well. So again, this is the thing there's a feeling of there's a ceiling that you reach in the UK and then you have to break out of it and get on a plane and come to the US. And I think that happens a lot more than people realize.
I didn't even think of it that way, that there's a ceiling, but it's true. Like if I think about like Idris Elba definitely hit a ceiling and then came over here and was doing Tyler Perry. So it's like he had to get right back on. Like, you know what I'm saying?
To pay his quote unquote dues.
To pay his quote unquote dues. Yeah. Like, yeah, now that I think about it, that's so true of so many, I've been really impressed with Ruth Negga.
Yes.
And how she's been able to come from the UK and just come in at a really high level in the United States.
Well, did you notice that at the last BAFTAs, she was nominated in the category of newcomer? That's in the UK.
No, okay.
So do you see what I mean about a ceiling?
Oh my gosh.
Right. She was on Misfits years ago.
She was on Misfits. She was in, what's that movie with, I think it was Cillian Murphy.
Yes.
I can't remember the name.
I forget the one. It was the Irish one.
Irish,
yes. Because, yes, she's Irish.
She's an Irish Ethiopian woman and she was playing an Irish. I saw that movie, I think, when I was 18.
I remember watching that and she's great in that.
Oh my God. She's also really good and she was amazing in that. The film about Shirley Bassey.
She was amazing in that. Yes.
That they had on the BBC.
They had a whole series.
They had a mixed race week, which was like an interesting.
I mean.
Is that what they call it? Because I know it's a different. I know it's like maybe, that's a different thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a different thing. I mean, for me, that I recall that film being part of a Divas on BBC 4 thing. So maybe they repackaged it for BBC America. But in the UK, it was her and it was, what's her name? Gracie Fields and another. So there was like three biopics.
Ooh, yeah. Because I liked, I thought that it was, I was kind of irritated when I saw it. Maybe it was BBC America that they repackaged it for. Mm. I was irritated when they were like, for Mixed Race Week, we will have Shirley Bassey. I was like, she's a lot more than just that, but I get it.
Yeah.
But also,
and if you think about the content of the film, which is very specifically about her, you know, growing up in Tiger Bay, and being, you know, a visibly mixed race child in a very, very white, you know, I don't know. I mean, listen, I claim Shirley Bassey because she's half Nigerian, so that makes her my aunt.
Yes.
So, you know. but yeah, I see what you say. I mean, but this is the thing. Ruth's career had been going up and up. And again, she had to leave the UK in order to do some stuff. And, you know, she gets Oscar nominated for Loving. And I think it's amazing how even the BAFTAs in her home-ish country could not nominate her in a similar, you know, they did the same thing with David Oyelowo, you know, the year of Selma. Mm-hmm. He wasn't nominated. And I was like, even if it's a pity nomination, just claim your son, England. Just claim him.
Yeah.
And they just didn't. And so there's a real kind of, and I talk about this with people, I'm friends with people who are in the creative industries in the UK. And we have, you know, these conversations over and over again that, you know, eventually I will have to leave, they all say. Eventually I'll have to go to Hollywood. And it's kind of sad. But it's also just, you know, the way it is. So people kind of accept it in a way. Just like, well, this is the world that we live in. And so, you know, I just have to go where the opportunities are and try and make something happen.
Mm. I'm really glad you cleared that up for me, because that's like, it's something I've been talking about with my boyfriend, with all of my black girlfriends. Like, where we're watching, like, literally me and my boyfriend, every time we watch an episode of Lovesick and like a black woman came up as like a former like lover or date, we both be like, oh my God, it happened again. But it's so true, because it's like, if you spend all your time watching Waiting to Exhale, then I think Netflix eventually figures out what I'm going to be interested in.
Right.
And they'll just like redirect me.
This is it. But I can tell you that the shock that you felt, don't think that you were alone in that, because I remember WhatsApping my friend and I was like, wait, in caps, is that Nicki Amuka Bird? And she was like, mm-hmm. I think it is, in a very mild voice. And mm-hmm. I was like, what? How did that happen? For me, it was when they were on the double date and there were these two black women. And I was like, no. I don't know who told you this was allowed, but seriously, I was genuinely sure. And the fact that Antonia Thomas is the lead, you know, the co-lead as well, is very interesting. And to have her just kind of be, you know, and she's doing, again, speaking of America, she's doing a pilot here as well.
That's what I was just talking about.
Yeah, Eric was just talking about yesterday.
You know, like, sometimes after a point, you just have to leave the island of your birth and just kind of go elsewhere. Like me. I'm here. I was in many ways at the vanguard. I've told them to come on. It's safe. Come on down, you know.
The chicken is good.
oh my God.
It's better.
It's better. How dare you? It is not. Okay, maybe it is. Certain kinds of chicken are better. Yeah. Okay. I haven't found decent Nigerian food in this city yet, and I'm angry.
You know what? I don't blame your anger. I don't blame you.
That's fine. Mm. There just aren't enough Africans in New York. It's okay. It's fine. I'll go back to London on holiday. I'll find it.
So we've talked a lot about your pop culture writing, but you now also, you've been writing a lot about like politics and hard news. Specifically, like you had this piece that covered the Dylan Roof trial, and you wrote a lot about the election. So I'm curious if you could talk a little bit to like that transition and maybe if there's anything that you like took from your pop culture writing to like in that approach to news.
I mean, I feel like all of my writing is essentially in the same basket, which is looking at kind of human beings and trying to kind of draw a wider picture from that. So in a way, it's not, I mean, like I said, I studied journalism at university, so I know that I'm more usually writing about pop culture, but it's not the only thing I write about. And in many ways, I think it's overshadowed the fact that I haven't always written just about popular culture. So this was more like a return rather than a transition to a new form of writing for me. It was kind of, you know, I did news when I first started out as a journalist. And so the shift into features and culture writing was something that happened over time. And the visa application process to come and live in America was essentially having to explain what I would be doing. And I was very clear about the fact that I would be writing about American life, American politics, American culture. And I think it's very usual for people to kind of put these topics in silos. And that's not the situation at all, because so often they bleed into one another and they kind of essentially become part of this much larger animal. So I think for me, the writing isn't that different, because what I'm trying to do is look at one product, in this case, Dylan Roof, and to look at him as a product of America in the same way that I would look at a TV show as a product of America. And then try and draw parallels. He doesn't, you know, the fact that television shows are not made in a vacuum, and men like Dylan Roof are not made in a vacuum. So to me, there's an obvious parallel to writing about pop culture, or writing about, you know, a murderer, a mass murderer who committed a hate crime. And I think you have to kind of look at it as, all my writing is essentially, what is the point of this? Why am I writing this? You know, what am I trying to kind of make clear? What needs elucidation? What is it that people have an idea but haven't quite connected together? So in writing, for example, about fan fiction, and having to look at it as it being a firm reaction to a lack of something. And you look at Dylan Roof and you go, well, sitting in that courtroom, hearing testimony and listening to or seeing the things that he wrote in his diary, in his journals, whatever, and understanding that in the wider context of the nation of America. And he, you know, again, he was not made in a vacuum. He was trained. He was
cultivated.
He was cultivated, exactly. Like somebody sowed a seed, somebody watered it, and somebody watched it grow. And that somebody in this, because I suppose you could argue, is American culture at large, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's very, I don't think they're very different in terms of what I'm trying to do with the work at any time. Is always trying to say to somebody, here is something you may have or may not have considered. And maybe you should take a look at that, because that's the other thing as well. A lot of my writing inevitably is going to be subjective. You know, these are my experiences. This is my knowledge. And I'm filtering them through very specific channels. And so perhaps I might see something that somebody else hadn't. Or maybe I'm seeing something, but in a different way. So I try to look at it as that. Like, I think about the condition, for example, of blackness and how, even though I'm not American, I don't think a racist would stop to ask me where in the world I was from.
Yeah.
You know, so I look at it kind of like that and just say, well, here's how this relates to me. If I had been in that church that night, would Dylann Roof have turned his gun away from me because I'm not American? The answer is no. Mm. In as much as, you know, I speak the way I speak. And that's the other thing as well. Like, I find it very interesting. One of the things Americans say, especially now, is, you know, when I'm speaking with them, they say stuff like, oh, you know, I like your accent, but it's not like I go, you know, there's this idea of kind of like, no one goes crazy over an English accent anymore. And I can stand here in my truth and tell you that is a lie. Americans love a British accent. Still, they don't always comment on it like they used to when I first came here, like a decade ago. But people still kind of go, oh, when you speak. And, you know, if you play your cards right, you can get really far on an English accent and a smile. So when I was traveling around doing stuff on the election or whatever, and you would ask people fairly intrusive questions for the piece that I wanted to write, or just, you know, out of interest, and people would answer me. And if I had an American accent, they would have given me a look like, huh? But if you say, so I'm so sorry, could you just explain to me, speaking to the mic, could you tell me precisely when you became a racist? And people start answering. And you're kind of like, I just ask you a deeply offensive question. And they're like, no, it's fine, because it's British. I like it. People will talk to you and just answer you because you sound like a posh white man. And it's like, oh, I see. At this point, my accent trumps my skin color. And I think that's also this idea, especially when it was around, you know, stuff about Trump or Hillary or whatever. When you speak in an English accent, I think people literally stop seeing you. Mm. And they hear the voice they've been conditioned to think of as intelligent and trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a reason why British people still play villains on screen. It's because, yeah. You know, the accent is learned. This is the other thing as well. Nothing is accidental. You know, the English as villains from Basil Rathbone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is there's a historical lineage of British people being evil. America, British people are evil. Like, this is just like it's a constant story. So, but they're not just evil, they're also intelligent. You know, they have, so when I speak in that accent, in this accent, people kind of stop and kind of go, huh, she might have something interesting to ask or to say. And people, human beings also, I think deep down, want to please.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many times you ask a question that you don't expect an answer to. And the simple thing is, people want to help. Yeah. People are helpful. They want to give you answers. They want to be understood. They want to kind of tell their story. And so you get to kind of ask. And if you happen to do it in an English accent, it disarms them and then they begin talking. And I think that's also the idea also that because I'm not American, I don't have, for example, the same, quote, you know, regardless of justification, resentments that an African-American woman would have.
Mm,
you know, you're not like, essentially, to put it crudely, you're a different black. You're not one of our blacks. So maybe you don't quite have the same history.
Mm.
So they're happy to tell you stuff because it's different for you.
Yeah.
So it's very helpful. You know, there are answers that I know I would not get if I went into, like, you know, somewhere in Essex and I was like, oh, I've got a question. They'd be like, yeah, all right, fuck off. But here it can be like, oh, you're foreign, you're different. And that tells, it gives them a permission, I suppose, to kind of say stuff. So that's how I approach everything, is basically I look at it and kind of say, what do I want to say? And a lot of the time there is a remarkable crossover between pop culture and politics. And that's the kind of the path I try to follow.
Well, damn. Well put.
Thanks, well put. So there's something that I have desperately wanted to ask you about for a very, very, very long time.
Oh my God.
So you used to do this thing every Friday on Twitter.
I knew it.
Yes. You knew this was coming. You knew this was coming.
Yeah.
You used to do this thing every Friday on Twitter where you would share just like 10 just like absolutely divine things that were making you happy that week. And I mean, like, you shared like this really amazing sexy gif of Marlon Brando as Stanley Kowalski in A Streetcar Named Desire.
God
with the,
bless Marlon Brando.
Oh my God, like all greased up and the tank top.
All
like,
of it.
You shared pictures of Angela Bassett, which I think you just need more of.
Yes.
And you used to share like cute photos of like Blue Ivy at Northwest and you called it hashtag BIMS 10 things.
Yes.
So before I ask the most pressing question, which is my second question.
Okay.
What was the inspiration behind BIMS 10 things?
There was no inspiration. You know, earlier when I said about how I meandered through life, yeah. BIMS 10 things was a result of one meander one day. I think I was having a less than good day and I was trying to find good things. And I was like, okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to just post some things of just things that are making me happy this week from Tumblr. Because I love Tumblr. Tumblr's my favorite platform.
Let's talk about it.
Tumblr is the happiest place on earth.
It is.
And anyone who says they don't like Tumblr, I'm like, you're following the wrong people.
Exactly.
Your dashboard is your problem.
Exactly.
You make it the greatness that you want to see in the world. I just don't understand. People talk to me a lot about Twitter and I'm like, no. This is why I don't tell people what my Tumblr is. Mm-hmm. It's private. It's mine. It's where my id gets to be. is that you?
This is some real shit. You're speaking real shit right
you
now.
Know what?
I feel like Britney has Tumblrs I don't even know about.
I have
like,
a couple Tumblrs.
Yeah.
I have because a couple Tumblrs.
That's the correct. I like how cagey you're being because that's how I feel about Tumblr. I'm like, no. People are like, Bim, what's your Tumblr? I'm like, you don't need to know.
No.
Are you
I
my
have
mother?
A fake public Tumblr.
Same.
Yes. That is my fake public Tumblr. I just am like, oh, Beyonce.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is a meme. All right. Repost. No, the real shit goes down someplace else.
Someplace else. You don't need to know anything about that place.
No.
Right. And it's amazing because people come to you. This is the other thing about being a writer and being on the internet. There are expectations in place. Mm-hmm. And people expect you to perform. You know, it's dance, monkey, dance. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I will not dance. So that's why my Tumblrs are private. Anyway, BIMS 10 things came about because I was having this bad day. And then I just put up some things. And then at the end of it, I was like, huh, that's a nice round 10 things. And then I think I tweeted at the time, I can't find the tweets anymore, but I think I said, huh, maybe I'll do this next week and call it, I don't know, BIMS 10 things. and then I did it the next week and the next. And then I did it for about 3 long years, which people don't realize. It's very difficult to find 10 things
every week
for 52 weeks a year. And I'm active on Tumblr. So a lot of it came from Tumblr. Mm-hmm. Some of it came from, you know, some of it was like, that's the other thing as well. Like people remember the filthy gifts, but I put I put journalism in there. I put some writing. I put music. Mm-hmm. I didn't put any of my work in there because, you know, you can find that anytime. But I put stuff that I thought was genuinely, things that had genuinely made me happy that week. Mm-hmm. And I did it around lunchtime in the UK, which was about 9 a.m. in New York.
Yes.
So people would kind of see it in the morning.
Oh, as soon as I came to work at my old job, it'd be there at 9 a.m. Friday, I could come to work and read BIMS 10 things. Because, like, I needed that shit.
Right. And I got that reply from so many people. Oh, I really needed that today. And I'm like, well, I'm happy to help. And then it finally ended just before I moved to New York last year. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that my hours were... First of all, I knew that I couldn't do that at 9 a.m. at work because like, come on, it's Friday, it's 9 a.m. I'm eating bagels. But also I just thought it's been 3 years, like it could die now, like, or at least it can be put on hiatus. It came back. There was one very bad week when I think there was a shooting or something. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know what, fuck it, I'm bringing it back. I need it this week. And I just had like really cute things like babies and like kittens and mm-hmm. puppies. And I was like, okay, this is just necessary to get through today. But it, you know, it's very much a sleeping dormant thing. It's not dead.
Right. So my second question is when is it coming back? You could have a BIMS 10 things once a month.
Uh-huh. And I would still,
yeah, we go bi-weekly. That's what we do because we were like, we can't do this shit every week. So we started going bi-weekly. You could just, I mean, I think people would still rock with you even if you reduce the frequency.
That is very kind. I will take it under advisement. Mm-hmm. But I guarantee nothing because it's like I said, it's very, very hard curating 10 things. And often new, like sometimes there were repeats. And, you know, sometimes someone would be like, oh, you posted this 7 months ago. And I'm like, bitch, it's hard. Can I?
All back.
Can you get off my case? So what if this gif of Mark Ruffalo has been here before? Allow it, please. But it's very difficult. And also, this is the other thing. I was spending time on Tumblr, not enjoying myself, but seeking things to put into 10 things. And I'm like, that's not the point of Tumblr. Tumblr is for joy. And I don't want to be saving things because I know you know, like I'm happy to say things. My likes and my dash are what they are. But it got to the point where it was feeling like, oh God, this is work. And this is kind of like when I reduced my Twitter usage as well, because I kept thinking, this feels like a job that I'm not getting paid for.
Yes.
And all my customers are angry.
Speak on it.
And there's
no one.
I can't tell them. I can't say go to the manager, because I am the bloody manager and I'm tired. So I cut down massively on Twitter, because Twitter felt like, yeah, it was getting me down. So I'm like, I don't want to make that Tumblr. I don't want to. I want Tumblr to remain this joyful space where I go for, you know, for the sake of it. And also, Tumblr's the best place to be a fan as well. Mm. So I would go there and just kind of immerse myself in my tags and just kind of have a good life, you know, for like 2 hours and then come out and be like, okay, now I'm ready to face the day. So it may well come back. It may come back. Like I said, it's not dead, but it's on life support, and we're praying for its life.
I'm praying. Prayer circle for Ben's 10 things.
Amen.
So,
well, Bim.
Yes.
Phenomenal.
Oh, thank you very much. You guys are phenomenal as well. Thank you.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Yes. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Tell people how they can find
yes.
you and your work and your tiny letter and everything.
Right. You can find me on BuzzFeed.com, the website, and it's just my name on there. And you can find me on Twitter, although technically you shouldn't because it's a mess, which is Bim Adew. So BIMADEW. And you can find me not on Tumblr because it's not for you, but you can find me on my tiny letter. Which is called The Fuck Is This? ? Which is the same feeling that I get every time I get an email from a newsletter. I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, yeah, I subscribe to this. So that's why I've named my tiny letter that. So, yeah, you can find all of that at tinyletter.com/bim.
Nice. Well, this has been another episode of For Color Nerds.
Yes.
For Color Nerds is hosted by me, Eric Eddings.
And me, Brittany Luce.
If you want to support the show, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes.
5 stars only.
Yes. You can also give to us on Patreon.
Patreon. Patreon.com/ForColoredNerds.
Very popping. You can also buy some of our merch. T-shirts.
Yes.
Mugs.
Yes.
Totes.
Tote bag.
We got you.
Mm-hmm.
We got it for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got it.
Reasonably priced. We have it for a reasonable price. And we'll ship it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have a good week. You guys have a good 2 weeks because we're biweekly. And be safe. Stay cool or warm, depending. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong.
Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.